Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. So, the big announcement. It just cracked me up. We were just talking about this Friday night. What were we talking about Friday night? That Ryan would be forced on Romney. Because Romney was about to become the Barry Goldwater of the current generation. So now the political operatives think they have a chance to get Romney elected, but I don't think so. Oh, by the way, and it is merely a by the way. Three people killed in Texas today, near University of Texas College Station. Or I mean Texas A&N. I'm sorry, it's in College Station, Texas. Apparently. Police or somebody was going out to serve an eviction notice, and now there are three people dead. And Rick Perry immediately came out and defended guns in Texas. But it hardly bears even talking about, does it? This hour is sponsored by Ring of Fire Radio. The message, traditional media is dead or dying, but we are still alive at Ring of Fire. Go to ringoffireradio.com, ringoffireradio.com. If you haven't listened to Mike Papatonio and who's over there with him now? Sam Cedar. Bobby Kennedy Jr., is he back? Okay. So check him out, ringoffireradio.com. Picking Paul Ryan, like I say, well, Michael Rechtenwald really puts it, I think, where it belongs, this selection. Writing at legitgov.org, Citizens for Legitimate Government today, he writes that the conventional political wisdom holds that Mitt Romney picked Ryan in order to energize this twisted, sick conservative base that any Republican now needs to get elected. Rechtenwald says Republican voters remained unsure about Romney's conservative credentials. Ryan, on the other hand, is a Catholic. He's not a member. Well, he's a member of a bigger cult. A social conservative, a fiscally draconian entitlement cutter. And more importantly, he helps Romney draw the clearest so-called contrast with the Obama administration. And thus, the choice of Ryan provides a basis for a real contest. Okay? That's the conventional wisdom. That's what we're all supposed to believe. With the endless attacks on Romney's wealth and the way he protects his wealth and everything about him. By the way, Ryan also announced he's only going to release 2 years of tax returns. Well, of course, what do you expect? according to Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, as you know, Romney has paid zero taxes for 10 years. And based on the fact of Romney's wealth and the fact that he's a billionaire who refuses to release those two tax returns, I believe one is not complete or something, Ryan is truly a preposterous choice, Rechtenwald writes. Ryan contributes no electoral viability to Romney. Anyone who still wonders whether or not Romney favors the rich will be left with no doubts now. The choice of Ryan provides the so-called opposition, you know, the other half of the gold coin, the Democrats, provides the Democrats with a ready caricature. So ready as to be distrusted as fabricated. I mean, my God, talk about putting somebody out there that the Democrats can just scream and rail against, right? But hold on, hold on. This caricature, Michael Rechtenwald writes, will be brandished to scare independents into the Democratic column and otherwise disaffected Democrats into the voting booth. But the Ryan choice does help both parties redraw their party lines and reestablish the supposed stark contrast that true believers are supposed to take as real. That is, Ryan Choice works to legitimate the electoral system itself, a system that provides no access to political power for the vast majority, but rather contains our choices within a sham opposition. How many times have we talked about this? Huh? Rechtenwall goes on, the parties not only kick each other when they are down, but they also pick each other back up because each, the Democrats and the Republicans, each needs its opponent in order to continue the farcical show of difference in order to contain real opposition within this bifurcated fraud. The object is to contain all differences within the party system in order to keep real opposition from mounting from without. Do you understand that? This is nothing new if you're a regular listener to this program. The Democrats and the Republicans are pretty much the same. They are both corporate-owned parties. Now, granted, the Republicans are more fascist than the Democrats, but the Democrats are moving there so quickly that within another 4 years, there will not be any discernible difference at all. As Michael Rechtenwald says, the Ryan choice sets up the possibility for so-called winning voters to feel they had a choice and that they chose the lesser evil. They can now rest assured after, you know, reelecting Obama, that less evil things will happen. Meanwhile, they have voted for the very evil that they believed they were averting. They will breathe a sigh of relief when Republicans will continue, while Republicans will continue to rail for another 4 years. At the same time, President Barack Obama will proceed to enact austerity measures that Democrats would scream about if enacted by Romney, and which Romney would have enacted had he been elected. So, no difference. The Democrats will sit silent as Obama cuts Social Security and cuts Medicare, to say nothing of his policies of drone bombing, domestic surveillance, secret renditions, and maintaining a list of American citizens targeted for assassination without so much as charges, let alone a trial. Oh, but what about the Supreme Court? The Democratic faithful cry, but what if Romney wins? His policies will be worse. Millions would suffer because people like you, Malloy, mistook the election for a farce. We must support Obama to avoid that possibility. And that's exactly the conclusion we are meant to draw. Rest assured, the ruling elite will not let Romney get elected. On the other hand, the threat had to be posed. They had to put this out there. Do you want this guy? The threat was necessary for the legitimation of Obama's austerity measures. So we can all say, well, at least it's not the Ryan plan. Yet the social spending cuts that Obama has promised and that the Ryan plan includes to a greater degree are inevitable. The cuts are inevitable not because greedy Republicans demand them, or because Obama is a Republican in sheep's clothing, or because Obama has character flaws. No. But because along with Republicans, the Democrats voted for every war funding bill, the increased military budget, bailouts to the tune of trillions of dollars, and tax breaks for the wealthy. Those are Democrats. So, conclusion, we can expect nothing but more service of the corporate, military, and imperialist elite by Obama in his second term. Oh, no. No, really?
Your Day Screaming with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Paul Ryan. Coming up later on this evening, probably the last hour, I'm going to share with you an email I got from a listener that I think you will find very, very interesting. The listener really takes me to task for my position. Of course, I'm familiar with this. It happened 4 years ago. But my position on the Obama presidency. So that's coming up a little bit later. Now, after the announcement was made about Paul Ryan, Bob Schieffer had Ryan on yesterday. And it was a series of softball questions that just kind of unbefitting a journalist of his experience. But Bob Schieffer asked questions like, you said yesterday, I'm going to quote you, Mr. Ryan, America is a place where if you work hard, play by the rules, you can get ahead. But the fact is, a lot of people don't think that's true anymore. They don't think the rules are fair. They think corporations and rich people are getting all these breaks, and they're getting stuck with paying the bills. They see some of the wealthiest paying the lowest tax rates. How are you going to fix that?
What we're saying is take away the tax shelters that are uniquely enjoyed by people in the top tax brackets so they can't shelter as much money from taxation so they can lower tax rates for everybody to make America more competitive.
How many years of tax returns did you turn over to the campaign?
It was a very exhaustive vetting process. It's a confidential vetting process, so there were several years, but I'm going to release the same amount of years that Governor Romney has. But I got to tell you, Bob.
And how many was that?
I'm going to be releasing two, which is what he's releasing.
And we're wearing matching outfits, too. Do you know my underwear looks just like his? Did you know that? We're like the Doublethink twins here, separated only by a generation and a dozen IQ points. Yeah, he's a fast talker. That's for sure. Now, Ryan says, what we're saying is take away the tax shelters that are uniquely enjoyed by people in the top tax brackets so they can't shelter as much money from taxation. So it immediately begs the question, of course, Schieffer never came up with it. Are you going to prosecute your president there, Blue Eyes? You going to hold your boss's feet to the fire about his tax shelters? This is all BS rhetoric. You know it as well as I do, Truth Seeker. This is hog snot. And Rechtenwald may be on to something. Michael Rechtenwald, who says, hey, look, this is a joke and a farce. Don't worry about it. The powers that be are never going to let Romney and Ryan become president. Now, I don't necessarily agree with Rechtenwald, but it's an interesting point of view. His thesis is that they had to put a real half-witted, and I'm not talking about Ryan's intelligence. Obviously, he's intelligent. But half-witted in the sense that that's the way he perceives everybody else. That Ryan having proposed his budget back, when was it, Kathy? Last year. I mean, it's nonsense. It is the most ludicrous. Would the rich get richer? Oh, yeah. Would the ultra-rich get even richer? Yeah. But I think the ultra-rich, the one-tenth of 1%, understand something. If Romney and Ryan become president, this country will probably explode within the first year. Because unless what they're talking about is just election rhetoric and they have no interest in following the teabag nonsense. You never know anymore, do you? We have a couple of more quotes from the Bob C. twins here, from Bob Schieffer. And we also, I've got to share something with you about Ayn Rand, because Paul Ryan says that the only reason he got into He says, quote, the reason I got involved in public service, by and large, if I had to credit one thinker, one person, it would be Ayn Rand. Okay. We are going to take a look at some selected quotes from Ayn Rand. Not about economics. We all understand that Ayn Rand was what she was. She was a liar and a hypocrite. She was on Medicare and Social Security in this country. She was a nutcase, a real nutcase. But she had some things to say about a woman's right to privacy where it concerns her reproductive organs that I think every teabagger should be aware of. Of course, no teabagger has ever read Ayn Rand. They don't read her. They just,
I like Ayn Rand. Ayn Rand, what's your name? Ayn Rand, I like her. Yeah, she's good. You know.
They couldn't get past Anne Rice, much less Ayn Rand.
That's true.
Ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Ring of Fire Radio. Traditional media is dead or dying, but we are still alive at Ring of Fire Radio. You can find them at ringoffireradio.com. Little more here from Ryan and Romney on Bob Schieffer's program. Schieffer asked asked about the plans for Medicare that Ryan introduced in his House budget. What it'll mean for older Americans and senior voters. And of course, Romney and Ryan both are lying through their teeth. When Romney talks about $700 billion taken from Medicare by Obama, it's not weasel words. It's not half-truths or a misleading statement. It is a goddamn lie, as anyone can tell you, anyone who is not a Republican operative will tell you. Of course, Schieffer never opens his twisty little mouth.
There's only one president that I know of in history that robbed Medicare $716 billion to pay for a new risky program of his own that we call Obamacare. Think of that. What Paul Ryan and I have talked about is saving Medicare, is providing people greater choice in Medicare, making sure it's there for current seniors. No changes, by the way, for current seniors or those nearing retirement. But looking for young people down the road and saying, we're going to give you a bigger choice. In America, the nature of this country has been giving people more freedom, more choices. That's how we make Medicare work down the road.
But you must concede you're going to have to do a little selling on that.
My mom is a Medicare senior in Florida.
Our point is we need to preserve their benefits because the government made promises to them that they organize their retirements around. In order to make sure we can do that, you must reform it for those of us who are younger. And we think these reforms are good reforms. They have bipartisan origin. They started from the Clinton Commission in the late 90s.
Reform it. That means to abolish it and replace it with vouchers. What is it, $8,000 a year that you can then use to go buy private insurance? $8,000 a year. Well, let me see if If somebody is 87 years old and all of a sudden develops some sort of intestinal cancer and they have their little check for $8,000, I mean, these people are just goddamn insane. But they're going to do it to you. At least that's the threat. They're going to do it to you. And when Romney says, we're going to give you a bigger choice, you know what the choice is going to be if these clowns were ever elected, whether to buy your BP meds or pay your phone bill. This is as much of a lie, only it has more disastrous effects than Obama saying, well, yeah, I'm for labor. You know, if there's ever a union just a strike or something, I'll put on my comfortable shoes and go walk with you. Really? We think these reforms are good reforms, Ryan says. They have bipartisan origins. They started from the Clinton Commission in the late 90s. What the hell was the Clinton? They had health care reform in the early 90s that these Republican scum, immediately sabotaged. Well, you know, I've said before, there is not a dime's worth of difference between these two parties. It's in the rhetoric that you find the differences. But lunatic Ayn Rand, Paul Ryan's biggest influence. Jan Frell, an alternate, put all these quotes together, but... I'll get to that in a second. There's a website that you should check out. It's called the AynRandLexicon.com. And let me just quote a few of these to you. This is from The Voice of Reason, one of her books, page 58 and 59. You ready? This is Ayn Rand's own writing. An embryo has no rights. Rights do not pertain to a potential, only to an actual being. A child cannot acquire any rights until it is born. The living take precedence over the not yet living, or the unborn. Abortion is a moral right, which should be left to the sole discretion of the woman involved. Morally, nothing other than her wish in the matter is to be considered. Who can conceivably have the right to dictate to her what disposition she is to make of the functions of her own body? Never mind the vicious nonsense of claiming that an embryo has, quote, a right to life. A piece of protoplasm has no rights and no life in the human sense of the term. One may argue about the later stages of a pregnancy, but the essential issue concerns only the first 3 months. To equate a potential with an actual is vicious. To advocate the sacrifice of the latter to the former is unspeakable. Observe that by ascribing rights to the unborn, i.e. the non-living, the anti-abortionists obliterate the rights of the living, the right of young people to set the course of their own lives. The task of raising a child is a tremendous lifelong responsibility, which no one should undertake unwittingly or unwillingly. Procreation is not a duty. Human beings are not stock farm animals. For conscientious persons, an unwanted pregnancy is a disaster. To oppose its termination is to advocate sacrifice, not for the sake of anyone's benefit, but for the sake of misery qua misery, for the sake of forbidding happiness and fulfillment to living human beings. Oh, my goodness, really? Really? The Voice of Reason, page 58 and 59. And the Ayn Rand letter, number five, two and three, number four, two and three. This is a last survey is the title of it. If any among you are confused or taken in by the argument that the cells of an embryo are living human cells, remember that so are all the cells of your body, including the cells of your skin, your tonsils, or your ruptured appendix, and that cutting them is murder, according to the notions of that proposed law. Remember also that a potentiality is not the equivalent of an actuality, and that a human being's life begins at birth. The question of abortion involves much more than the termination of a pregnancy. It is a question of the entire life of the parents. As I have said before, parenthood is an enormous responsibility. It is an impossible responsibility for young people who are ambitious and struggling, but poor, particularly if they are intelligent and conscientious enough not to abandon their child on a doorstep, nor to surrender it to adoption. For such young people, pregnancy is a death sentence. Parenthood would force them to give up their future and condemn them to a life of hopeless drudgery, of slavery to a child's physical and financial needs. The situation of an unwed mother, abandoned by her lover, is even worse. I cannot imagine the state of mind of a person who would wish to condemn a fellow human being to such a horror. I cannot project the degree of hatred required to make those women run around in crusades against abortion. Hating is what they certainly project, not love for the embryos, which is a piece of nonsense no one could experience, but hatred, a virulent hatred for an unnamed object. Judging by the degree of those women's intensity, I would say that it is an issue of self-esteem and that their fear is metaphysical. Their hatred is directed against human beings as such, against the mind, against reason, against ambition, against success, against love, against any value that brings happiness to human life. In compliance with the dishonesty that dominates today's intellectual field, they call themselves pro-life. By what right does anyone claim the power to dispose of the lives of others and to dictate their personal choices? Ayn Rand. Now, for you single issue folks, you folks that would only vote for Obama because you're afraid of what a Romney-Ryan administration will do to women, here's your answer. If Paul Ryan really is an Ayn Randian, then what's to worry about? I mean, he's stating it categorically that he is, that Ayn Rand is his influence. And of course, Ayn Rand was also an atheist, and I think that's one of the reasons she had no patience with these half-witted, misdirected people who would run around screaming, "Murder! Murder!" Feel no obligation. They put their faith and trust in
Seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
Has been sponsored by Ring of Fire Radio. Sam Cedar, Mike Papantonio, Bobby Kennedy Jr., and the message, traditional media is dead or dying, but we are still alive at Ring of Fire Radio. That's ringoffireradio.com. And it's one of the best programs on the air, bar none. If you haven't heard about it, well, check it out. Check it out. The fact that Ayn Rand is against the idea of restricting abortions is, you know, kind of a yawner. Most of the people who claim to be acolytes or followers or cultists of Ayn Rand have no goddamn idea what she was about. None whatsoever. If you told some of these half-wits that she was a Russian Jewish atheist, if that's not a contradiction in terms, they would look at you with their mouths hanging open and their tea bags bouncing on their funny little hats, and they wouldn't have an idea of what you're talking about. But to all you baggers who monitor the program, just you should understand that your favorite prophetess is someone who totally and completely supports the idea of a woman having a right to abortion. Not only that, but she sees your argument that they're little bitty fetuses running around that are really God's delivery of life. She sees that as the hog snot that it really is. Now, the average teabagger, of course, couldn't even spell Ayn Rand, much less having read any of her writings. Well, she wrote The Fountain Blue. She wrote Atlas Bowed. Oh, man. So what we're going to do next hour, after this break at the top of the hour, we're going to open up the phone lines and see if you have any comments about the selection over the weekend by Mitt Romney of Paul Ryan. You didn't see that coming, did you? Oh, my God. The reason I got involved in public service, by and large, if I had to credit one thinker, one person, it would be Ayn Rand. There's a piece at alternet.org. Lunatic Ayn Rand, Paul Ryan's biggest influence. And there are 10 articles previously published on Alternet that shed light on why Ayn Rand's influence on Ryan is so dangerous. Number one is about how Ayn Rand seduced generations of young men and helped make the U.S. into a selfish, greedy nation. And this is by alternate contributor Bruce Levine. He writes, when I was a kid, my reading included comic books and Rand's The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged. There wasn't much difference between the comic books and Rand's novels in terms of the simplicity of the heroes. What was different was that unlike Superman or Batman, Rand made selfishness heroic, and she made caring about others weakness. End quote. So Bruce Levine's explanation of how Rand captured the minds of so many should be a must-read. he went on to say, quote, while Harriet Beecher Stowe shamed Americans about the United States' dehumanization of African Americans and slavery, Ayn Rand removed Americans' guilt for being selfish and uncaring about anyone except themselves. Not only did Ayn Rand make it moral for the wealthy not to pay their fair share of taxes, she, quote, liberated, end quote, millions of other Americans from caring about the suffering of others, even the suffering of their own children. Why, of course. Rand's philosophy in a nutshell. The bloggers at Think Progress explain that the philosophy Ayn Rand laid out in her novels and essays was, quote, a frightful concoction of hyper-egotism, power worship, and anarcho-capitalism. She opposed all forms of welfare, unemployment insurance, support for the poor and middle class, regulation of industry and government provisions for roads or other infrastructure. She also insisted that law enforcement, defense, and the courts were the only appropriate arenas for government, and that all taxation should be purely voluntary. Her view of economics starkly divided the world into a contest between moochers and producers, with the small group making up the latter, the producers, generally composed of the spectacularly wealthy, the successful, and the titans of industry. This is the vice president's model. Well, you know, at least he has one. George Bush, what did he have? My Favorite Monkey? Or what was his book? The Upside Down Turtle? I don't know. All right, your phone calls when we come back. If you want to check in, 877-996-2556. Sponsored by George from Houston, Texas. George's message: Mike and Kathy, I served in the Marines from 87 to 91 and have been driving a semi for the last decade. I enjoy listening to your show when I'm on cross-country runs. Thank you for your vocal support of groups like Veterans for Peace. Also, thank you for bringing to the public's attention the book War is a Racket by Smedley Butler. In short, thanks for everything, George from Houston, Texas. Thank you, George. Appreciate the sponsorship. Seven past the hour. I already said that. We're coming to your phones here in just a second. A couple of things here from Alternate about lunatic Ayn Rand, Paul Ryan's biggest influence. Ayn Rand, of course, railed against government benefits, but she sucked up Social Security and Medicare when she needed them. there's a surprise. We talked about this, too. Alternate's Joshua Holland puts it this way, quote, her books provided wide-ranging parables of what she called parasites and looters and moochers, using the levers of government to steal the fruits of her hero's labor. In the real world, however, Rand herself received Social Security payments and Medicare benefits under the name of Anne O'Connor. Her husband was Frank O'Connor. According to author Greg Mitchell, also Ayn Rand called the nuclear weapon capable of incinerating entire cities, quote, an eloquent example of argument for and tribute to free enterprise. How about billionaires and corporations using Ayn Rand's writings to brainwash college students? Alternate reports, Pam Martins reported that Charles Koch, who pushes, quote, millions of dollars through his foundation into economic programs at public universities and mandating approval of faculty and curriculum in some instances, end quote, partnered with the Southern banking giant BB&T, mandating that Ayn Rand's book Atlas Shrugged is taught and distributed to students. And this author, Gary Weiss, explains how the Rand movement, which was little more than a cult when the Atlas Shrugged author died 30 years ago, but the movement has effectively merged with the vastly larger libertarian movement. While many differences are likely to remain, this means that objectivism, Rand's quasi-religious philosophy, is going to permeate the political process more than ever before. And this from author Hal Crowther, who writes, quote, for an eyewitness portrait of Ayn Rand in the flesh, in the prime of her celebrity, you can't improve on the Ubermensch chapter in Tobias Wolff's autobiographical novel, Old School. Invited to meet with the faculty and student writers at the narrator's boarding school, Ayn Rand arrives with an entourage of chain-smoking idolaters in black, and behaves so repellently that her audience of innocence gets a life lesson in what kind of adult to avoid and to avoid becoming. Rude, dismissive, vain, and self-infatuated to the point of obtuseness, she names Atlas Shrugged as the only great American novel. Rand and her hissing chorus in black manage to alienate the entire school, even the rich board member who had admired and invited her. What strikes Wolf's narrator most forcefully is her utter lack of charity or empathy, her transparent disgust with everything she views as disfiguring or disabling. Well, the only reason, I read both Atlas Shrugged and what's the other one? I never could understand what the point was. The Fountainhead also. The characters that she came up with were I can remember as a 16-year-old thinking cardboard, cardboard, cardboard. But they were grotesque caricatures. I didn't realize at 16. At 16, I thought they were ridiculous and didn't finish them. In my 30s, I read them again and thought, Jesus Christ, this woman is insane. So Paul Ryan says that Ayn Rand is the reason he decided to get into politics. Stephen is in Burbank. Hi, Stephen.
Hi, Mike. I'm going to miss you, boss.
Well, I'm not going anywhere. It's Sirius left
and,
us.
And I cannot afford a computer.
Well, you'll have to wait until... Now, wait a minute, Kathy. They're delaying us midnight to 3 a.m. Is that Eastern time? So we'll be on 9 to midnight. We're in Burbank?
Yes, and Barbara is going to monitor the show and tell me all the good stuff. Like what she used to tell me, how I became, enamored of your... point of view, your world view, because it's exactly the same as mine. It's like from that comic book, I is you, you is me. We've seen that.
Well, here's one thing to consider. Right now, where you are, Stephen, it's 7:13 in the evening, right?
All too true.
Okay, at 9 o'clock, your time.
I will be asleep in the loft.
Oh, you go to bed at 9. Okay.
And Barbara will monitor the show and tell me all the good stuff.
Okay.
Maybe occasionally I can get to the library and do a little bit of a stream and hack out an email or something.
That sounds good to me. Well, I hope you're going to continue to call in. You can, like I say, you can...
call in blind.
Well, you don't have a computer. That's right. Damn, what are we going to do about Stephen here, Kathy? What about KTLK? They don't take us live either.
We get the first 2 hours, and it's all fuzzy, and you can't.
It's all fuzzy. You can't hear it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, little by little, we are being moved into oblivion.
They're doing their best to break up the in crowd.
What can I say? This is radio.
Well,
We were surprised at Sirius. We've been with Sirius over a decade.
Well, you know I love you. You know I'll always love you.
Well, that's very sweet, Stephen.
And I called in to also make mention about a book that has something to do with the so-called libertarian quotes, philosophy unquote.
Yeah.
And we talked about it before, and it's called The Illuminati Papers. And in this book, Robert Anton Wilson, who has a PhD in psychology, analyzes, you know, the guru-disciple game and, you know, how it's a back-and-forth game. And he analyzes, all kinds of things in society. And he's not really, like, the word Ayn Rand does not appear in the book, The Illuminati Papers. But there is a little bit of an undercurrent leaning towards libertarian, quote, mm-hmm. philosophy, unquote, in so much as they're trying to say that it's difficult to get out. It's about this thing we call human nature, and it's about how the ebb and flow. It has a lot to do with the economics, and this is a thing that I want to push very hard about the Illuminati papers, because, here's what I was trying to say. He doesn't say that there is really such a thing as flesh and blood Illuminati. There is no club, you know, the Illuminati club, you know, the 5 or 20 people that rule the world. That does not exist. It's just the idea. That's what he's extrapolating on. And also, the definition of libertarian, there are two of them from Roger Scruton. One of them is the iconoclast, the one who tears down the phoniness in society, kind of like, you know, Holden Caulfield did in Catcher in the Rye. There's a lot of that stuff in there. But what I recommend very highly is Neuroeconomics by Hagbard Salin, which is probably Robert Anton Wilson himself, and also The Rich Economy by Mordecai LaFell. The foul, F-O-U-L. The first one is about 5 pages, you know, takes about 10 minutes to read. The second one's about 3 pages.
Neuroeconomics
by Hagbard Salin. That points out what the problem is. And then The Rich Economy points the way towards solutions on how to solve these problems.
I'll check them out. Stephen, I've got to go. Commercials, stay in touch, please.
Definitely.
All right, Stephen, thank you very much.
Here come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
Radio star. 21 past the hour. Back to your phone calls. Joe is in Colorado Springs listening online. Hello, Joe.
Hey, Mike. This is Kevin in Colorado Springs.
Oh, I'm sorry. Kevin in Colorado Springs. My bad.
One man's religion is another man's nightmare. And
yeah.
With these two clowns we got on the Republican side, that very well could come to pass. I don't think Obama can lose unless they fix the election.
Uh-huh.
But there's a number of Republicans out there that aren't enamored with Romney anyway, so I really don't know that you'd see that. This guy, Ryan, they live in their own little world, and it's not even just this wealthy world that he lives in. These Ayn Rand people seem to think she has all the solutions to life, and life isn't that easy. People get hurt, sick, et cetera, et cetera. And yet, no, we don't want to take care of anybody. We don't. It's all me, 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 me. And that's what turned me off from Ayn Rand eventually. I read the book when I was in junior high, and I thought, you know, that sounds kind of good. But when you start thinking about it, and putting into practice what she's teaching, it doesn't work. Very simply, it doesn't work. So I just want to say I'm sort of ecstatic they put Ryan on the ticket, because I don't see any way that Romney can win unless an awful lot of people are more gullible than I think they are.
Well, who was it that said no one's ever gone broke overestimating the taste of the American public? And that is certainly true in politics. The move toward complete fascism in this country, and somebody emailed me and said, quit saying the move toward fascism, it's already occurred. Well, not quite. What we have right now is the interim step, corporatism. Fascism brooks no independence whatsoever. I'm talking about, a right of free speech or the right to publish or the right to meet and so on and so forth. We're not quite there yet. So this move toward fascism that has always been extant in this country, there has always been an inclination in this country because of the religious roots of so many of the framers. Now, not that they put together a Christian nation, but they all were in fear and trembling of this deity. I think a lot of them identified themselves as deists, even though they rejected some of the theology. But the three religions of the book, or the three peoples of the book who follow these Abrahamic religions, They live in utter fear, and they're ready to poop in their pants any second because of this God figure, this father figure that they have constructed and created. So fascism fulfills that. Fascism gives them, Hitler was God to the people who needed that sort of thing. That's all he was. We haven't come up with a Hitler yet in this country. We've come close a couple of times. We have a couple of people I think would like to be the American Hitler, not in terms so much of the death camps, but just in terms of being the absolute ruler of this country. But this almost subliminal or submerged or subconscious desire to have a big bad daddy with a goddamn stick who would beat you across your head if you didn't behave has always existed here. It's always been here. The progressives and the liberals and the hippies and the dope smokers and the free love people and the anarchists have always struggled against that fictional big daddy. I don't know if it's the majority of Americans. I don't know if it's a plurality of Americans. I don't know if it's just a huge minority. But this desire for Papasan to kick ass and take names, and they're willing to give up everything to get that.
Well, yeah, the people that came here in the late 1600s came here to escape religious persecution. First thing they did, they persecuted those.
Well, sure.
Like them.
Sure.
This nation was founded on that. That in the taking of a nation by another people, we took away this nation from the Native Americans without so much as a thank you, So, karma, that's kind of what you got to say.
Well, maybe. All right, Kevin, I have to leave it there. Thank you, sir. I appreciate
Thanks,
you
Mike.
Checking in. Take care. We'll be right back, Truth Seekers.
Today, dear little boy of mine. What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned that war is not so bad. I learned about the great ones we have had. We fought in Germany and in France, and someday I might get my chance. And that's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school. And what did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned our government must be strong. It's always right and never wrong. Our leaders are the finest men, and we elect them again and again. And that's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school.
get tonight. How much he hates these people. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by George from Houston, Texas. His message: Mike and Kathy, I served in the Marines from 87 to 91, have been driving a semi for the last decade. I enjoy listening to your show when I'm on the country, on cross-country runs. Thank you for your vocal support of groups like Veterans for Peace. Also, thank you for bringing to the public's attention the book War is a Racket by General Smedley Butler. In short, thanks for everything. George from Houston, Texas. Thanks for the sponsorship, George. The number here is 877-996-2556. Devrin is in Seattle. Hi, Devrin.
Hey, Mike. Always a pleasure to talk to you. Stray for just a second and say that if you had an endless amount of lifetimes, Mike, I don't think you could do better in the call screener and the wife that you have.
Well, thanks.
Awesome, bro. It's always a pleasure talking to her and you. And on top of that, I always look forward to, man, your daughter, she's just so smart. I mean, we guys have her read her skits. I'm just, man.
She likes to do plays. She likes to be on camera, as she puts it.
Yeah. It makes Christmas quite enjoyable and the other stuff. But what I wanted to call back about was this framing that they're doing. And scrolling the roll on the different radio stations entirely this morning, this commentator had the nerve to say all this stuff, and then one of the things he said was Paul Ryan is smarter than Obama, and my jaw just dropped open. It's like, I mean, the audacity to even say something like that, much less, you know, positioning. And then it just makes it seem like this whole race is between Obama and Paul Ryan. Granted, you know, Obama's done a lot of things we didn't like on the progressive side. But not at all.
Well, the truth is, it is going to be a race between Paul Ryan and Obama. Mitt Romney is a cipher, and I think the reason Ryan was forced on him was I don't think Romney had any interest in choosing Ryan to begin with, because Romney wants to be the center of attention, and Paul Ryan has gotten more attention in the past year than Romney's gotten his whole goddamn life as far as politics are concerned. And I think that Romney's handlers, and I don't mean his campaign staff, I mean his real handlers, the people that fund this move to fascism, started to get nervous. First of all, you got to remember the amounts of money that were spent to try to destroy Romney.
Yeah.
During the Republican primaries. I mean, there were tens of millions of dollars spent to try to get rid of him. Well, they couldn't, for the same reason they couldn't get rid of Reagan. And that is that Romney looks like a president. He looks like a movie star version of a president. So they couldn't get rid of him. Most people do not vote issues. Most people, and I'm saying that advisedly, but I'll say it anyway. Most people vote for something other than issues. It may be what they think is a single issue that the man or woman represents, but they don't vote issues. They vote on likability. They vote on appearance. So anyway, I'm getting too far afield here. Romney had as much chance of defeating Barack Obama as I do. In other words, nothing, zero. And what the neo-fascists, the ones on the right anyway, the corporatists are on the left, but the neo-fascists on the right. They said, "No, this, you know, we're heading for another 1964 when Lyndon Johnson beat the hell out of Goldwater. Yeah. Damn, I kept thinking Goldberg, Goldwater.
Beat I was going to say Stephanie Miller, but
right. Well, you know, her dad's running mate.
Exactly.
But Goldwater lost so badly. That's when the fascists in this country, the neo-fascists, decided, okay, this is going to take a while, and some of us are not going to be alive to see it, but our grandchildren will see it. And that is this move to push the country into fascism. So what we're seeing here is the come to fruition, this whole movement for the past 50 years, yeah, to push this to the point. And Romney was not the man. Romney's not even a conservative, much less a neo-fascist.
Mike, I know you got a bunch of callers. I want you to get to them, but thank you for giving me, you know, getting me straight. Because I feel like in my, you know, I just know it's not going to be no cakewalk, and I know we need to be prepared.
All right. You know, well, thanks, Deborah. I appreciate you checking in, pal. Take care. But to follow up on that thought, it's very clear Romney is not a conservative. Take a look at his record as governor of Massachusetts. I'm not saying he's Democratic progressive by any means, but he is not a conservative in the way the conservative movement has trashed and destroyed the Republican Party in this country as it has in the past 30 years. Well, not the Republican Party was any great shakes before Reagan, but you know what I'm saying? For Christ's sake here, listen, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, if you're going to parse my words, then the whole thought is not going to come through. And the whole thought is simply this. Romney could not beat Obama. Ryan and Romney probably can't either. But at least now the billionaires will start pouring money. The billionaire fascists will start pouring money into the Romney campaign. Not that he was lacking money. I mean, he's out collected money. This is what this has all gotten down to over Obama for the past three or four reporting periods anyway. But now the all out push. And the idea is, of course, if Romney Ryan team is elected, Romney may or may not last 4 years, but I will guarantee you at the end of 4 years, they are going to remove him and back Ryan. The idea being what they're already seeing now, 4 years of Romney Ryan, 8 years of Ryan, and then beyond that, it doesn't matter anymore. It just doesn't matter. Now, that's the scheme, in my opinion, for the neo-fascists. And the only thing that's going to subvert that is the American people. I don't know that the American people, and I'm using that as a collective noun, I don't know that the American people have the will. I really don't. So we'll see, won't we? But, you know, to try to say, and this brings me up to the next hour in a minute here, to try to say that voting for Obama is somehow going to make everything okay is delusional. I mean, how many years does a person need in the Oval Office to prove what he's about? I'm not saying that Obama's not a nice man. And he's got a nice family, but he's not a leader, and he's damn sure not a liberal, and he's damn sure not a progressive. He is a corporatist. He is going to do what the corporate power structure in this country tells him to do, period. So, do you want a corporatist? Do you want a fascist? I don't think you ever again are going to get a liberal or a progressive or even a 70s-style Democrat. Those days are gone. They're gone. They've been bought and paid for by the corporate right. They own them now. So if you honestly believe, if you honestly, in the bottom of your soul, believe that the best thing you can do is to go into the voting booth this November and vote Democrat, well, then go ahead. I think the best thing we can do is to energize the American people through a collective desire to save not just our crappy-ass, stinking political system. It is unsavable. We've got to come to that conclusion. But to replace it with one that is life-sustaining, not the one that we have that is life-threatening. Why is that so hard to understand? Not for you, truth seeker. I know you know it. I damn sure know it. Next hour, I'm going to share with you a letter I got from a longtime listener to this program and a frequent contributor who says she would take a bullet for my daughter, but I, on the other hand, am so sleazy with my refusal to just wildly support Obama that I'm betraying my own wife and daughter. We'll be right back.
Radio Right. From the left, it's Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by George from Houston, Texas. And his message is, Mike and Kathy, I served in the Marines from 87 to 91, have been driving a semi for the last decade. I enjoy listening to your show when I'm on cross-country runs. Thank you for your vocal support of groups like Veterans for Peace. Also, thank you for bringing to the public's attention the book War is a Racket by General Smedley Butler. In short, thanks for everything. George from Houston. Thanks, George. Thanks for the sponsorship. Dave is in Arcata?
Arcata, California.
Arcata. Hey, Dave.
Humboldt County near Oregon.
Oh, that's right. I always miss, I look at it and I think I see an I in there. I want to say Arcadia.
Yeah, well, that's a bigger city down L.A.
Right.
County. But we spoke a couple of weeks ago, and it was right towards the end, and you asked me to get back. Cause the thing that has been troubling me for a long time, and I think I've got the answer to it, and I think you're open to the idea, and that is that in a democracy where the people have a right to vote honestly for what they think is in their best interest, and I know there's a lot of dummies. There's a lot of people that say, oh, I voted for him because I like the way his wife wears her hat.
Right, right.
I like his dog and whatnot. But those people will cancel out. Thinking people should prevail. And it comes down, in my opinion, to how many votes can a voting machine flip if a voting machine can flip votes. And right. I believe they can flip as just as many as they need to flip. That's what I'm experiencing. That I have pretty direct experience that Patriot Act tech goons can invade wherever they want to and do whatever they want. And a voting machine is a very simple computer with a modem. And you recall Clint Curtis, he said, he was asked to help design the machine just so that they could rig elections. And so that, to me, is something we damn well better do something about. People don't want to wake up, even the best of people. I think Senator Sanders doesn't want to believe it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. Is he saying, I don't think the Republicans would stoop to such a thing?
Well, no, I think it's the word conspiracy, or the phrase conspiracy theorist has gotten such a bad rap that so many of these people in the public eye, who are in the public eye in a way that they consider to be legitimate, don't want to go there because they're afraid of being tarred with that phrase. Oh, he's a conspiracy theorist.
But think of how much worse is happening to this country by the best of people not willing to go and deal with the reality that's right in front of our faces, I think.
Right.
They got to see it and do something. And just being labeled a conspiracy theorist is not an adequate excuse.
Well, no, it isn't. But so many of these people are so fearful. There is fear 1,000 miles thick overlaying this country right now. Whether the right wants to admit it or not, I'm talking about the proletariat right. Whether they want to admit it or not, they're scared to death about global warming. They're scared to death that their power is going to go off forever. They're scared to death they're not going to be able to educate their children, or their grandchildren are not going to be educated. So they, when a population gets crazy like that, they look for a Hitler. They look for a Mussolini. They look for Pinochet. They look for a Huey Long. They look for somebody who's going to promise them, I tell you, a way for all these fears to be alleviated. All you have to do is just vote for me, listen to me, shut up, sit down, don't talk, I'll show you the way out of here. This is where we are, and I don't see any way to pull back from this. I think that the system has got to collapse or be brought down and replaced with one that is truly democratic, small d.
I so much appreciate your grasp of your reality and your willingness to go to where it takes you. You don't feel the need to distort it, even if it takes us in an ugly direction. You got to see what's real to do something about it. You do that favor for us, and it's much appreciated. Some of the best minds right now in this world think we're not going to make it through our adolescence in our evolution. We're going to do ourselves in with some of the stupidity that's prevailing right now. But if there's a hope for it, it is going to be in people like yourself willing to try to shake us and wake us up. We need to hear it big time.
Well, you know, I always reject that. I'm part of the group of people like you, like a core of people listening to this program. We do understand what's going on. We do get it. It's frightening to me too. I think it's frightening to everybody. But the fear that I feel is not the fear of that results in immobilization, where I can't move, or where I'm willing to follow some lunatic leader. No. That was one of the things that was appealing about the Occupy movement to me, and I'm not intentionally putting them in the past tense because I think they have a lot to do yet. But was the fact that they were not seeking a leadership position. What they were seeking is a position of letting people know what the situation was. You know, the whole phrase 99% and 1%, it did not exist until Occupy. But I hear what you're saying. Dave, I got to leave it there. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. I hope you will call in again.
I'll do that.
All right, sir. Take care. All right, we have a break coming up. When we come back, I'm going to share this letter with you, this email with you, and I'll let you know what one of our steady, loyal listeners for the past decade or longer has to say about your humble and obedient servant. So stick around. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. And this hour is being sponsored by George and Karen in Oregon. Thanks, George and Karen. Their message, in a time of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. That's a quote from George Orwell. Mike, thanks for being that revolutionary that isn't afraid to tell the truth. Well, thanks to George and Karen in Oregon. And as promised, I wanted to get to this email that was sent to me. And like I said, I'm not sure how to respond to this, so this will probably be my response, just reading it on the air. But you've heard me, if you're a regular listener to the program, you've heard me talk about Diana from Florida. She's been a sponsor. She sponsored a couple of hours over the years. And the frequent contributor with their emails, most of which I've read when they've come in. This goes back for a long, long time. Well, I got one from her this morning. And I'm going to share it with you. She writes, "Hello, Mike. As you know, I've been a loyal listener since the days at IE America when you and Peter Werbe were a back-to-back duo that made for so many engaging afternoons. You got me through one of the blackest days of my life, December 12th, 2000, the day I realized the United States had been conquered in a bloodless coup that the news media and the Democratic Party seemed not to notice or care about. You cared, and you got me through the eight dark years of the Bush administration because you voiced not just my thoughts, but my anguish as to what had become of our country. I cried tears of joy when Obama was elected, just to know the Bush years were ended. My joy was short-lived, of course, but I have been at least comforted knowing that whatever Obama's failings, it was better than another Republican administration would have been. And again, your voice has been my voice, as one disappointment followed another. But this is where, for the first time in all these years, I can remember disagreeing with you. Yes, the Democrats are corrupt, corporatist bastards. A pox on the lot of them. But there is a difference between a Republican administration and a Democratic one, at least for women and minorities. When you tell me you can't hold your nose and yet again vote for the lesser of two evils, I get angry. Really, really angry. No, it won't make any difference with regard to corporate power and illegal wars and a host of other things. But it will make a huge difference for women and minorities, whether the minority is based on race, religion, age, or gender preference. We women and minorities will be demonstrably and severely impacted by the return of a Republican administration, which is why I get so angry when I hear any progressive or liberal male talking about voting third party or not at all. You're making me feel like change from a nickel. The way only sexist males have in the past been able to make me feel. It's like you seem to care so little about how this affects us that you're not even considering it as a factor in how you vote. Are we women that unimportant to you? It's going to be a tight election with a lot of election fraud. We need everyone who is moderate or left of moderate to vote a straight Democratic ticket this November, or we risk the Republicans stealing yet another election. The election cannot be close, or we'll lose it. If Republicans win because you males had a fit of pique and failed to vote or voted third party, you should have to hang your heads in shame. The time to have demonstrated your anger and dissatisfaction was in the primary election. The general election is where the grown-ups face reality and choose the best outcome, even if it's merely the lesser of two distasteful outcomes. With the well-being of women and minorities at stake, how can it even cross your mind that the outcome makes no difference? I'm reminded of the scene in the movie Dr. Zhivago where Komarovsky is trying to get Zhivago to accept Komarovsky's offer to rescue Zhivago, Lara, and her daughter from the approaching Cheka. Quote, "Don't you see her position? I know exactly what you think of me and why. But if you're not coming with me, she's not coming with me. So are you coming with me? Do you accept the protection of this ignoble Caliban on any terms that Caliban cares to make? Or is your delicacy so exorbitant that you would sacrifice a woman and a child to it? End quote. Is your white male pride so extravagant that you would really throw Kathy and Molly and the rest of us women to the wolves? I don't know which is greater, my hurt or my anger. I would take a bullet for dear little Molly without a second hesitation. You can't even hold your nose and vote in her best interest? Don't you care about us? And it's signed Diane in Florida. Well, I'm glad that Diana in Florida is able to express her rage and anger and apparent contempt for me in such a restrained manner, and with a quote from Khabarovsky, no less. The only way I can respond to this is setting aside the really insulting parts of this, especially where it challenges my dedication as a father and a husband, which is okay. You know, I go after people, too. I usually go after fascists, though. You know, I usually go after right-wingers who want to destroy the country. According to Diana in Florida, I am now in that group insofar as destroying the world where it concerns women and minorities. I kind of don't see it that way. I see the destruction that possibly will come with the Republican administration as destroying not just the rights or the protections or the legal protections to women and minorities, but to everybody. I've tried to make it very clear on this program that I am not asking anyone to vote one way or another. My vote, which will be one out of probably 100 million, is not going to make the least bit of difference. As far as voting in primary, there was no Democratic primary to speak of because there was no challenge to Obama. So Diana says the primary is where the children go to fight each other, but the general election is where the adults face up to their responsibilities. Mm-hmm. Diana calls the Democrats corrupt, corporatist bastards, and then she curses them, a pox on the lot of them. But then she says there is a difference between a Republican administration and a Democratic one, at least for women and minorities. And again, this is where Diana parts company with me, because I don't see how a Republican administration is going to or has in the past protected anybody. I'm more on this when we come back. Let me take a break and we'll come back to this.
Bend but never break me, 'cause it only serves to make me more determined to achieve my final goal. And I call back even stronger, not a novice any longer, but the deep and the conviction in my soul.
21 past the hour. I'm talking about this letter I got from someone who has supported the program by listening and contributing to the program over the years, more than a decade. But all of a sudden, I am tossing my daughter in the creek, according to my writer, Diana. Or not taking a bullet for her, whereas my correspondent here would. It's pretty hard a letter to respond to because I've tried to make myself clear over the years. What Diana in Florida's problem is with me is that I refuse to endorse Obama. And I've made very clear over the past, I don't know what year, why I was not going to do that. Diana's point is that there is a difference between a Republican administration and a Democratic administration, at least for women and minorities. And I maintain that there are other demographic groups that exist in this country, not just women and minorities, that would suffer mightily under a Republican administration. As a matter of fact, white liberal males of the working class and lower suffer. I don't know why that is not, or very seldom, acknowledged. It's not just women and minorities who feel the lash of Republican politics. It's old people of color or Caucasian. It's, in fact, whether they are aware of it or not, they being the general public, everyone suffers from Republican administrations, especially in terms of, lately, in terms of global disasters, the refusal to acknowledge that we're facing mega death on this planet from the fact of global warming. So that affects everybody. The argument that I should vote or advocate in favor of Obama because Republicans are nasty to women and minorities is an argument that holds nothing for me, absolutely nothing. Of course I have daughters. I have adult daughters. They have children. I'm married to a woman. My interest for women is about the same as my interest for everybody. And that is gender equality, justice under the law, equal opportunity. I mean, I've made that very clear over a 27-year career in radio. So I've also made it clear that I personally will no longer accept the lesser of two evils. I simply will not do it. We have a president right now who is doing nothing. Nothing. In terms of providing leadership, nothing. In terms of the working class, in terms of assistance to the poor, whether they're men or women, minorities or not, nothing. This president has done nothing to alleviate the burden on top of, say, the millions of people who had their homes foreclosed on them. The millions of people who are being hauled into court because of fraudulent, on the parts of the credit card companies, fraudulent charges now against people who ran up credit card debt. But all of a sudden, if you read the article in the Times this morning, there's a whole new rat's nest that the financial services industry has dumped on the American public. We have a president who has done nothing where it concerns environmental issues. By granting drilling permits and mining permits and refusing to stop mountaintop removal, Mr. Obama is assisting in the murder not just of women and children, Diana, in Florida, but everybody. I don't know how the line is drawn. We understand that we live in a sexist and a racist society. That is not of my doing, and my refusing to vote for more sexism and racism does not mean that I am supporting a sexist and racist other party. I would think that that would be clear. I would think there would be no misunderstanding about that. But I guess Diane in Florida needs somebody against whom she can vent her fury. And this is the problem. I don't make the laws. The white males who sit in the Congress make the laws. Obama, Romney, whoever it is, they don't make the laws either. Now, I'm not trying to be condescending here with the civics lesson. I'm just saying, if someone really feels that their group, whether it is female or over 70 or minority, if their group is going to be severely punished by any political party, then I would suggest that that individual band together with other individuals of like mind and remove those people from elective office. Not write a letter to a talk show host that busts his ass and assume or accuses him of not even being interested in defending his own daughter.
Gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
Company town. On what used to be solid ground. Nobody was ever gonna
25 before the hour. Again, referencing this letter from Diane in Florida that kind of busts me for not being a supporter of Barack Obama or advocating that people vote for Barack Obama. And again, the I certainly can sense the frustration of Diane in Florida, but her position is, if I don't advocate for Barack Obama and Barack Obama loses, that somehow I will be to some degree responsible for that, to me, which to me is just totally impossible. If I had an audience base like some of the neo-fascists who control the airwaves, might have a little bit of an influence one way or the other. But this is the Mike Malloy Show, not Glenn Beck, not Rush Limbaugh, not Sean Hannity. And I just refuse to be a political moron any longer. Her position is, Diane Florida's position is, that the election of a Republican administration is going to be hell on minorities and women. It's going to be hell on everyone. I mean, look back at 8 years of Bush and Cheney. Was that particular hell on women and minorities only? No, it was particular hell on everyone, the 99% of us who are not, well, in the 1%. So, it's also been my position that the pain apparently has to become so great to wake the American electorate up as to what is going on before the American electorate, which is allegedly where the power resides, will do anything about it. It has also been my position that, and this is true of the last election, that what we probably need is a Republican administration in all three branches of government. We have it in two right now. The Supreme Court is totally right-wing Republican. The House and the Senate are totally right-wing Republican, even though the Senate is under the titular control of Democrats. It's under the control of Democrats who don't have the courage to stand up in the so-called greatest deliberative body on earth and tell the Republicans to go straight to goddamn hell. So what we have, in addition to two branches of government totally sucked into the black hole of right-wing neo-fascism, we have a president who doesn't have the courage to lead us anywhere. Nowhere. This is a president who goes ahead and grants more drilling permits when everybody knows that the goddamn planet is burning up. Does he provide leadership? No. He is surrounded in his administration by the worst capitalist predators in the history of this dying country. People from Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan Chase, General Electric. These are his top advisors. Now, if I am supposed to vote for this person again, then I will, to put it in Diana from Florida's terms, be throwing my wife and daughter to the wolves. So, Diane in Florida says she would take a bullet for dear little Molly without a second of hesitation, and I, to the contrary, can't even hold my nose and vote in her best interest. Her best interest is not to continue with a president or a party or an administration that continues to do what this president, this party, and this administration continues to do. Will the Republicans be worse? Hell yes. Will that finally be a motivator? I'll tell you what I'm teaching my daughter. I'm teaching my daughter how to fight back, how not to be sucked into the same crap that got us to the point we're at now. I'm teaching my daughter to be tough and not to listen to any bull crap from anybody, especially not from Democrats, liberals, or progressives, so-called. It's easy to identify the enemy. It is not so easy to identify an enemy who is not right in your face. So as far as Molly is concerned, I appreciate the fact that Diana in Florida would take a bullet for Molly. But you see, what I'm trying to teach Molly is how to make sure that no bullet comes her way. And that includes not continuing to vote for political parties and political leaders who do nothing but try to strangle and murder my child and my grandchildren and my neighbors and Diana in Florida. So, I appreciate your letter, Diana. Thanks for writing. It was very heartfelt, but you're 1,000 miles from a solution. You're about as far from a solution of this horrendous political sinkhole that we're in as you could possibly be. If you think continuing the policies of the past 4 years, a nation that is run by corporatist power, and as far as the Republicans are concerned, if they do win, and now with the selection of Paul Ryan, there's a damn good chance they will. But if the Republicans do take over, and if all of a sudden this little dance around the edges of neo-fascism that's been going on in this country for the past 80 years, if it finally takes root, maybe then the American public will do something other than just sitting back and whining about, oh, let's make sure we vote Democratic. Oh, yeah, that's going to solve things. With a government that is openly fascistic. Not this hidden around the edges fascism that just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. Let's cut to the chase. Let's put the fascists in office. Let's see what happens. And let's see if the American public at that point has enough interest in saving its own ass. And if it doesn't, then those of us who cannot stand to live under a fascist system will do like the Jews in Germany did in the 30s. We will goddamn leave. Because the system is not ours now. It hasn't been ours for the past 35 years. So as far as my vote or my advocacy is concerned on this program, give me a break. Give me a break. It's not going to make the least bit of difference. And I forgot to mention, coming out of this, pray this message is sponsored by George and Karen in Oregon. Their message: in a time of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. George Orwell. Mike, thanks for being that revolutionary that isn't afraid to tell the truth. George and Karen in Oregon. George and Karen in Oregon, I'd like you to meet Diana in Florida. Because apparently I have tossed women and children and minorities under the bus by refusing to vote for more corporatism, by refusing to endorse someone who has proven over the past 4 years that he doesn't give a rat's ass about what happens to this country. Nothing. Mr. Obama is there to get along, go along, make his mark in history, and move off the political stage. Early in her email, Diana said she cried tears of joy when Obama was elected. So did a lot of us. How'd that work out? What have those tears of joy turned to now? I know what they've turned to for me. Bitterness, disappointment, and a total understanding that the system itself is corrupt top to bottom. I don't care who the Democrat or who the Republican is. You want to get rid of the corruption? Get rid of the system. You want to change the system? Put 20 million people in the streets and let the powers that be, i.e. capitalist America, understand that the time has come that we are not participating in their goddamn game of destruction any longer. Until that time, please spare me any emails about how I am tossing my wife and my daughter to the wolves. Thank you. This hour has been sponsored by George and Karen in Oregon. Their message: in a time of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. George Orwell. Mike, thanks for being that revolutionary that isn't afraid to tell the truth. Thanks, George. Thanks, Karen. Thanks for your sponsorship. You know, I've learned in the course of doing talk radio all these years that the people who seem to support you the most, if you don't provide for them a complete security blanket, they will turn on you. And that's okay. I mean, that's just human nature. I've come to realize that that's just the expectation, that is the reality. And that's the reason that I wanted to to share this letter I got from Diana in Florida. I can understand her frustration. I can understand her fear. And it is her fear that is the driving force behind this email. I think it's fear. I've mentioned this before on this program. The country right now, the entire country, is just eaten alive by fear. And we all know that fear is immobilizing. And sometimes the best, or not the best, but the first reaction to fear is to lash out. Lash out at another country, invade another country just for the hell of it, scream at your favorite talk show host just for the hell of it, go home and beat your spouse or your children or kick the dog just for the hell of it, because it's an outlet for fear. I understand that. But I just want to, I think I have made very clear over the years what my position is. I will no longer play this filthy game. I won't. And in refusing to play the game, the political game of, oh, is it Democrat? Oh, is it Republican? Oh, is it Democrat? Oh, is it Republican? When both parties are so utterly and absolutely corrupted. I mean, Diane, in her own letter, even says, yes, the Democrats are corrupt corporatist bastards. Well, oh, okay. Okay, but somehow the Republicans are worse corrupt corporatist bastards? I... Really? Okay, then it's time for the American people, not some 25-cent talk show host. It's time for the American people to turn out in the millions with acts of utter and total civil disobedience. To say to the corruption, we're not going to allow you to control us any longer. But that doesn't come from the wild exhortations from a talk show host. It will if you're a right wing thug. If you're a right-wing moron, I mean, Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh, not Hannity. Hannity is just a figurehead. But Limbaugh and Beck and some of these other right-wingers, oh, yeah, of course they inspire their sick, effed-up listeners to do all kinds of mischief. Beck and O'Reilly even have them going out killing people. Killing people. Beck and O'Reilly inspire people to go commit murder. But that's not what you hear from a liberal or a progressive. What I talk about, well, I don't think you hear it. I don't know. I don't listen to talk radio. But what I advocate on this program is that if you are convinced that the system is broken, you don't try to fix it by continuing to vote for a system that's broken. I mean, that just defies logic. Now, I realize a lot of people see this country as floating in a leaky boat, and everybody is, you know, stuffing rags in the holes and the cracks to keep the boat afloat. Isn't it time to stop thinking in those terms? Isn't it time to realize that the leaky boat analogy is what keeps the leaky boat floating? Isn't it time to rethink that whole scene and you're back up on shore, and before you take off in the leaky boat that you know is leaky, you smash it into a million goddamn pieces, set it on fire, and then build a new boat? One that does not leak, one that's not made out of wood with holes and cracks in it, and then set sail. Or something. In closing this out, you know, I want to make sure that people don't understand, people do understand that I am not picking on my letter writer here. This is a very common thought. I've seen this thread. It runs through an awful lot of Democrats, old-style Democrats, of which up until, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 years ago, I guess I was one. But it is not a solution. Continuing to promote and assist in our own oppression by voting for the lesser of two evils is not a solution. Now, for some people, when they're in a panic state, anything can be seen as a solution. I think we have to take the longer view and realize that continuing this process is only continuing our little trip in the leaky boat until eventually we're out of sight of land and the boat sinks. It's pretty simple. See you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
Stay tuned for